For Academy Award-winning actor Colin 21st, for March 21st, 2012, each of us records an entirely different and personalized episode of Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
How's it going, guys?
It's going pretty good.
How's
it going out there in sunny California?
Pretty good. We're having a very San Francisco kind of week. Yeah. We ate some Rice-A-Roni. We rode
a
tunnel car. Uh-huh. What else did we do? We got our nails done.
Yeah.
Did you ride a Golden
Gated, if you know what I mean?
We went up to the neighborhood that is the border between the Tenderloin and Knob Hill, which is referred to on Google Maps as Tender Knob.
Yep. I got really into a game, and then it was bought by Zynga. So that's a very San Francisco thing.
Hey, you know what happened just 18 minutes ago was that the Idle Thumbs Kickstarter successfully funded.
Woo-hoo,
not that there was any doubt for the last month that was going to happen.
Sure.
We got to podcast
BFFs.
We got to have some beers with those gentlemen last night, and it was delightful.
They were delightful.
They were every bit as delightful as their on-air personas would lead you to believe they are.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah, it was really sweet. Congratulations to those dudes. I can't wait. I guess it's going to be like a month before they get their infrastructure set up. We were worried that there weren't going to be any sirens interrupting the recording, but apparently their studio space is right next door to the San Francisco Fire Department training ground.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it's like next to it, like a super tall, burned out building that will be on fire a lot of the time, I'm sure. So.
And I think the building itself is a siren factory.
Yeah. Yeah.
with mandatory hourly lunch breaks.
Right.
So, Riff, what have you been up to this last week?
Not much new from usual. Got a new iPad. I played a little Infinity Blade 2, which is pretty much the same as the first one, except shinier.
Did your iPad catch fire?
Do you walk around in a dungeon and stuff? I thought that in that one you walk around in a dungeon and stuff. Still just a sequence of boring fights.
Yeah, just a sequence of fights. I think Infinity Blade Dungeon is another game that is not yet out.
Okay. It's just Mike Tyson's stab out.
Yeah. I also played a little Groove Coaster, which is pretty great.
Groove Coaster is pretty good.
Did you see the report that the new iPads are like 10 degrees hotter than the old ones when you're using that graphics intensive stuff?
Yeah, I haven't noticed that with mine at all, and especially I was a little bit worried of it because mine's inside like a leather wallet, but I haven't noticed any trouble.
It's a big wallet.
Yeah.
You must have a lot of money or live in a country where the money is really big.
his pants
well,
are
I did,
large.
But now I have an iPad.
All right, you had to spend it all. We don't have a new iPad. Kevin, why don't we have a new iPad?
Well, my girlfriend has one.
I see. So you bought your girlfriend one instead of your podcast.
Yeah.
I see where your loyalties lie.
I am not sure, like, what I would do with an iPad, to be honest. Like, all the functionality. Like, so one of the things I did this past week was buy my girlfriend an iPad, and I was afraid for a couple hours that I had just bought myself a breakup because she immediately like spent 4 hours just ignoring me and playing her iPad.
Just playing Plants vs. Zombies.
She has so far basically been using it for stuff that she could have done on an iPod Touch.
Like playing Run Zombies, except carrying an iPad.
Sure. No, but like, you know, she liked a lot of the games that I had on my iPhone. She doesn't have an iPhone, so she like immediately got those and played those, even at the like small resolution, so she wasn't even using the like full resolution of the screen or anything.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, seeing her play Dungeon Raid. It's like, sweet, I finally got an iPad so that I can run this iPhone emulator.
You know, it is a game that she really liked, and like it's on my phone, so she can't play it most of the time. So that's a thing, you know. And she got access to her like Google eBooks, which that's much more pleasant to read.
Are Google eBooks like googly eyes?
Googly books,
They rattle around
instead of O's. They have little eyeballs.
I find that I play some games on it, but I find that the majority of my time spent with the iPad is spent reading comic books or watching Adventure Time.
Yeah, I like signed in
specifically
my,
Adventure Time. That's
my
it.
Netflix Live, or not like Netflix Live, my Netflix streaming account on the iPad, so she can do that because I don't use it very much.
Yeah.
Is Netflix Live a thing?
No, I meant streaming. And then she did get the Ticket to Ride app and has played the shit out of Ticket to Ride. She's probably played like
also 50, all of her public transit is free.
50 games. Yeah, that's true.
That counts as a ticket. Did she get the Clipper Card app? Again, you just have to slam your iPad into the little reader on the bus.
No.
Did she get that adventure game, Don't Break Your iPad?
She didn't. Now you're making me worry that she's going to
get Elder Signs. That is, Elder Signs is an excellent game on the iPad that you guys can
I would have a hard time recommending that game to her or anyone.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. Jenny and I have played a lot of it.
Ticket to Ride is good, though. She appreciates it because she gets to play with computers that take their turns instantly, as opposed to playing with me, where I sit there and think about it and I strategize.
Right.
And yeah, I'm apparently obnoxious to play board games with.
Because you're always just bloodthirsty cutthroat, man.
The Carcassonne app is pretty good too if you're into that.
I've heard that you guys are supposed to play Mage Knight before I get back into town. Mage Knight, the board game. Because
we keep meaning to play another game of it, but other things keep cropping up, or our sleep schedule is such that it doesn't allow for a 4-hour board game and things like that.
Oh, it's a 4-hour board game. I didn't realize it was that.
Well, long. I mean, it's one of those games where as you get used to everything that has to be done on a turn, it goes a lot faster. But our first game was like 4 hours long.
Wow.
Probably a real game is only a couple hours.
Huh. Okay. I've been really appreciating the 30-minute Seven Wonders games. Like, those are...
That's like those, 210
wonders
per minute. That's
a surprisingly good game, yeah. I just looking at the box and, you know, looking at the bits and all, I didn't expect to be particularly interested in it, but it turned out to be quite a good game.
Yeah, it's like, it's got just enough strategy that you're, like, enjoying it, and everything is everybody's making choices at the same time, so it's kind of... There's a bit of interaction, but it's also kind of solitaire-y.
Is there an iOS version of that yet?
I don't know.
Not that would be great.
Weird to do. You'd like a good one would be a board, like an iPad in the middle where everybody could see what was going on, but then you were just making all your moves on like a phone.
What? No, there is no real central board in.
But you need to be able to see what everybody else has.
Yeah. I don't know.
If you don't, then you can't make a bunch of your
decisions. I just want to play against AIs because I don't like how long you take to make your moves.
Okay. You can play a two-player game, so you could probably just play two parts of the two-player game.
Yeah, but then you have to have like that weird
a dummy player.
Yeah, that weird AI.
Yeah.
That playing card-based AI.
It's not really an AI.
You roll a 20-sided dice. That makes it AI.
Does it now? What else have you done in this great city of San Francisco, Zach?
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah. What have you been up to?
I don't know. What have I been up to?
You've had some sushi. You've had some burritos.
Oh, yeah. El Matate. Yeah. They have the best burritos.
They are really quite high up there on my list of burritos. Get a good Al Pastor burrito.
That's the real San Francisco treat. I mean, it's rice, and I guess there's some roni in it also. Vanilla Ice knows what that's like.
I've taken to just getting one of their like complimentary water cups and filling it with salsa and then bringing that home. Because I use about a half a cup. Well, I mean, in terms of empirical measure, like a full cup of salsa per burrito.
It's pretty disgusting. You just sort of like have this on-the-fly enchilada process.
It's not really enchilada-ing.
Boy, I would have liked to have been an enchilada
really
on the fly at that
drink
meeting.
A cup of salsa.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to drink it, I don't think, because that sounds gross, but effectively drinking it in small doses with some solid food is totally awesome. So,
on the last episode of Advice Hot Dog that we recorded from here, we devised a method for naming children and have decided that Roy's baby is going to be named Dick Baby 4000.
Okay. All right. That's pretty good.
I'm pretty excited about that.
I think Corinne will totally agree to that.
Oh, absolutely. She was out of the country when we decided, so she doesn't get a say in the matter anymore.
That's true.
Sorry, Corinne.
Well, if the baby had been born out of the country, would it be an American?
I don't know. Don't you get dual citizenship of the United States and the Atlantic Ocean?
Atlantis?
Yeah.
Atlantean.
Ocean citizenship, I think, gives you the ability to breathe underwater.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. And +2 constitution.
Hmm.
Yeah. I can't even think of anything else that we've done. We had such a magical evening with the Addle Thumbs gentleman that it has overshadowed everything that has happened before and everything that will happen from now on.
We played a bunch of pinball.
Oh, yeah, we did.
That was on a different day.
We played the Centaur.
We tried a bunch of different kinds of whiskey.
There are not enough video games in the world that involve a man who is a centaur, but instead of having the bottom half of a horse, he has the bottom half of a motorcycle. And I need to do something about that.
I think I agree.
I really was getting into the pinball machine that was like, I don't know if it was called Broadside or not, but it was like pirate themed. And there was a mechanism in it where you could get a ball down into like a cannon kind of thing, and it would rotate back and forth, and then you'd hit one of the flippers and it would shoot the ball out in whatever direction it was pointing at the time.
Nice.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is nice to get like some called shots on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Did you shoot it into the electric chair that then caused Thing and Uncle Fester to argue about who got to touch the ball?
I did not.
That might have been a different game.
That was the one next door, I think. Yeah.
Next door at the sushi restaurant.
Yes.
Then we ran and drank a beer and ran back to pinball and played more pinball.
Yeah.
And it was great. I like that place. Even though they're on their website, they list two different sets of hours for when they're open on Sunday. So Kevin and I got into an argument. Their website says they're open from 11 to 9. Their website says they're open from 2 to 9, buddy. And then it turned out that we were both looking at the same website, and it just had two different sets of hours listed for Sundays.
Well, no, it said we're open Tuesday to Sunday, 2 to 9. And then, like, two paragraphs below that says, we open early on Saturday and Sunday. Oh. Which is a great way to, you know,
I guess that is an efficient use of words.
People informed. Your people informed? Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, I've been actually playing some video games. I think that I always play video games. It's just that this time I actually wrote down the video games that
you're recording the show from the computer that you played the games on.
Yeah.
I think that's the important
thing. And I'm recording the show, with my dick touching the post-it note that I wrote the notes on.
I see.
So I played some Wizorb. Wizorb came out on Steam.
Okay. Is that any good?
Oh, how is that?
No. Frustrated by it. I think it has a lot of potential, but it does this one thing that makes it annoying for me to play, and so I don't want to deal with it. So the way that it works, this sounds really great. Game? Say what?
Is it just describe
it? It's like it is Puzzle Quest, but instead of Bejeweled, you're playing Arkanoid.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Sounds great, right?
Yeah.
Except
Sometimes the
individual
monsters.
No, the individual units of play. The individual the units of you going out and earning gold, which you use to like fix buildings and unlock things in this town that's like the sort of central hub for gameplay.
Okay.
Require you to play 12 levels of Arkanoid.
Wow.
And that is just way too many.
Huh.
I mean, I get that that's just what the game is, but the fact that that's what the game is makes me not really want to play, because it's just like I
12 consecutive?
12 consecutive screens.
Jeez.
Of breakout with a limited number of lives. And if you lose your last guy on the 11th one, you just erase. Yeah, you get nothing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a little aggravating.
What was that RPG breakout game?
That weird space one? Yeah, I don't remember what that was called. That was crazy, though.
Because that seemed like a really solid game and gameplay mechanic, and like
except it was a little bit microtransaction greedy. It suffered a little bit from its revenue model. I ended up giving them like $10 or something, and got, because it was one of those things where it's like, well, you can play this at a really frustratingly slow pace, or you can give us some money and get just way too much of it. You know,
you do suffer from this problem where you play a game and you're like, I'll give them $5 or $10 or whatever, and then you get like all the goodies and you're like, this isn't fun anymore, and you stop playing.
Yeah, I did that with Spiral Knights. It's like once I had the ability to unlock everything, I just stopped caring.
Yeah,
because I'm like, you know, giving them $10 got me so much more of this stuff than the hours and hours of play that I did before. That it's like, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that's how people feel when they donate to KOL and sell their goodies. Maybe it is. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, Spiral Knights, as far as I know, didn't have anything at the time that I could spend a whole bunch of that currency on at once.
Right.
Right? Like, I was so limited by my level that I couldn't, like, buy some really sweet gear. So there just weren't like a lot of upgrades available
to
me at the time. But yeah, this, I don't know, man. I might try Wizorb again, but it's like, I wish that you played three levels of Breakout in between being able to like do something else.
It's like a single player game, right? Like,
yeah.
Maybe you have it on hard or
I don't think
long
so.
Or something.
Yeah, I have it on long.
Does it look cool?
Yes, it does. Well, I really...
The,
16
I believe it's the very... art was done by Paul Robertson, the guy that did the Scott Pilgrim game and, you know, internet stuff.
That is another game that was apparently made in Game Maker, the Scott Pilgrim game for Xbox Live.
Huh.
At least it was prototyped in Game Maker. I don't know.
That's something you've been doing.
I've been messing around with Game Maker a little bit because when I found out that Spelunky was made in Game Maker, I was like, hey, maybe Game Maker is actually the engine that I want for prototyping stuff. Because I've always lamented not having a ready engine for prototyping
stuff. When I started thinking, like, and have a dude move around in a level.
Yeah, be able to like jump, and maybe shoot without having to program what jump is.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared of the code.
You want discrete verbs, and you want to be able to just verb them.
I saw a thing on Twitter where somebody said, "Oh yeah, my game uses programmer art and artist code," and I thought, yeah, that pretty much describes everything that I've ever done. I played a bunch of Super Crate Box. Well, I wouldn't say I played a bunch of Super Crate Box. I would say that I played maybe 5 minutes of Super Crate Box.
I played about 30 seconds of it. No, maybe 2 minutes.
That game is hard as fuck.
Yeah, playing it on the iPad is ridiculous. The controls, it is so hard to hold the thing and hit the controls with your buttons. It just
and in a game that requires such... Like, I don't know, man. Robert Ashley was all hating on the people who gave Super Crate Box for iOS bad reviews, saying that the controls were for shit. And he pointed, his evidence was, look at the high score tables. Obviously, the controls aren't for shit. It's like, well, no. Obviously, it is possible to get good at this, but it is sure as hell not fun. The steepness of... I kind of enjoy the game, although it is a game that makes me dread unlocking things.
Yep.
Because unlocking weapons just makes it harder because you have more weapons that you have to get. Like the number of times I have gotten killed because I was looking, I shifted my gaze slightly to look at what weapon I had picked up.
Oh, yeah. Instead of just shooting to see what it did.
Well, yeah, because sometimes it's the thing that fucking bounces off the wall and kills you.
Yeah.
The game explicitly apologizes for unlocking that because it knows it's a dick. It's a neat game. I mean, it's got that just instant replay, like a game lasts a few seconds.
I played like 12 games of it because I was like, and I started getting better, but I also was like, you know, this is not interesting enough to keep me coming back over and over again.
Yeah. And the last thing I tried to play was the fucking Ghost Trick Riff.
Ghost Trick Recon.
Recommending that.
Ghost RPG.
You didn't like it?
Recon Trick.
Okay, 12. I really, really, really like the gameplay of it.
Tell me about what it is.
We've talked about it on the podcast before. It's the thing where you're dead and you possess objects in the environment and can make them do things.
It's like difficult to move across the room because you have to like convince
them. Which is super cool, except in the first level, at least, here's what happens.
Yep.
You possess an object and you do a thing and it makes a thing happen. And then you sit through 50 fucking dialogue boxes that are... A person saying a thing, your character confirming it, the person saying, yeah, and then saying it again, and then your character saying, oh, I get it, and confirming it again, and then your character again saying, yes, that is what I'm going to do. And then the other character saying, yeah, let's do it. And you saying, okay, I am totally going to do it next. And I got to the point where, like, just the thing popping up that was about to let me play this fucking game was a pretty good reward. You know, I was like, oh, finally. Finally, this fucking conversation is over, and then you would get to do one thing. I would say that in playing the first level, I spent easily 95% of my time just
reading
fucking dialogue bubbles. It
gets better because I mean the first level is.
Are they just?
I mean, there's
to tell
a lot of tutorializing in the first level.
But it is like, it's like they're trying to be funny, and their gag is that they repeat everything 10 times.
I mean, Saturday Night Live does that.
Sure.
I mean, Saturday Night Live does that.
Yeah.
I mean, Saturday Night Live does that.
It's not funny, but if you keep doing it, it'll
Saturday Night
get
Live
funny.
Does
it's
that.
Gotten funny again. Yeah. This didn't get funny again. It didn't start funny. It didn't stop being funny because it never was, and then it didn't start being funny again.
I wonder if they have a problem where they don't know how to end the game either.
Could be. It just it's like a Stephen over. King novel.
Yeah.
It's like a Stephen King novel. yeah. So, I don't know. Is it worth continuing to mess with Rift? Does that get better?
Yeah, I feel like it did. I didn't even particularly notice that. So
yeah, but you play really fucking say, but Phoenix Wright.
Yeah, I was just about to say you're used to...
I enjoyed the Phoenix Wright games. So
billions of.
But this isn't a game where the like Phoenix Wright. The game is about the dialogue, right? Like it's about you reading things and figuring things out. So that, you know, that wouldn't bother me so much. But this one, Jesus Christ, it was terrible.
Sounds kind of awful.
I don't know. You should try it and see if you're as annoyed by it as I am. Maybe I'm just. It's this iPhone. It gives me no attention span. I'm bored with this podcast already. Let's do something else.
I'm a little surprised. So a game that I saw, I guess, like just a day or two after we recorded last week, and immediately dismissed because it looked dumb, was Draw Something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched it for a few more minutes, and then I was like, fine, I'll get this and see what it's like, and have played probably 200 rounds of it, 200 matches of it or whatever.
And now Zynga owns it.
And yeah, and then
if there's
today,
a
Zynga
correlation.
That was insane. That was like, so I went from hearing about this game for the very first time when I saw my girlfriend playing it to later that day, literally everyone I saw playing it, including like we got onto the train and there was a girl standing on the train with one arm in the little strap and one arm holding her iPhone playing Draw Something.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck? And then like
it
the next
spread
day,
like wildfire. It was out for 2 months and they went from like 100K a week to 100K a day to like 100K an hour or something like that, just in terms of
their
sales.
Revenue. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like it apparently just went exploded in the past week.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It's, you know, it's a lot of fun and it's weird because like, it is just not competitive at all.
Yeah. When I saw her playing it she was like sort of explaining it to me and I was like, oh, okay. So like, do they get a bonus for guessing your word fast?
Yeah.
Why is it actually showing them the process of you drawing all of this?
That
stuff
actually becomes important
for communicating motion and communicating things like that. And communicating concepts or communicating things like, this is an 8-letter clue and it is fucking Lion King.
Yeah. Yeah, so a bunch of their clues are pretty terrible. Like, a bunch of their words to guess are pretty terrible, like Lion King and Lady Gaga. Like, that's as a single word, right? Like, that's not even clued that it's two separate words. So, like, it has all kinds of problems, and yet it's still pretty fun. Like, I don't know what it is. It's the asynchronous, like, you can just sort of pick it up and play it for 30 seconds and like guess a word or draw something real quick.
Well, I mean, it seems like you can play it for 30 seconds if the person only took 30 seconds to draw their picture.
Well, I mean, you can always quit it in the middle of their thing and come back to it later. Yeah. You can always skip to the end of their drawing if you want, I think. Well, you can always skip to the end of them guessing your thing, I guess. And then, I don't know. You can be kind of funny. You can like guess things that you know are wrong to like make them laugh if they're watching your replay.
Okay.
You can always type like little nuances
in there if you have the letters for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I
don't know, man. I think I've been spared the trouble of actually trying it and complaining about it later because now Zynga owns it and I'm not going to give them a dollar.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Because I'm on a high horse, and from there I can't reach my wallet.
They do a couple interesting things. So like, you can play it for free, and then there's ads, and you start with like 0 coins or whatever, and then you can pay them $1, takes away the ads, and they give you like 400 coins, which is enough to buy one of the color packs, or some extra like bombs, which just help make it easier.
Bongs,
yeah. and the first set of colors is pretty limited. And if you start playing with other people that have more colors, you're like, oh, man, I wish I had purple and orange and brown.
Yeah, so you can draw the sticky purple hairs on your dank nug.
Exactly.
Otherwise, how are they going to get the 7-letter word dank nug?
Yep.
I wish it let you make up your own words.
It's pretty buggy, actually, which is kind of frustrating. I'm currently in a game where every guess is being applied to the previous every drawing that I do is being given the guess from the previous drawing, and so they're all failing on my end, which is obnoxious.
But I guess it becomes about seeing how far you can get the volley going between two people before somebody
biffs it.
How do you biff it? How do you lose?
You just can't. If you don't figure out what they're trying to draw, you can either pass. So if you pass, it resets it, or you can just end the game entirely, and it kills the volley.
I mean, it seems like it eventually gets down to just being like a weird jumble. Right. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it could be, but
except the fact that it might be two bullshit words.
It might be proper nouns. It might be like somebody had to draw Tom Brady for me, and I'm just like not a sports person. I knew okay, it's a quarterback, and I'm pretty sure that's the Patriots logo.
So then, did you Google it?
I Googled Patriots quarterback.
Did you multitask and run Safari on your iPad?
On my
you're playing on your phone. I also cannot imagine trying to draw anything on a phone, but
it
works.
It's not, I mean, it's definitely coarse, and you definitely screw things up, but I'm surprised, like, you start to develop a bunch of shorthands for things. It's like, I actually am appreciating...
15-letter word, par for the course.
Exactly. I'm starting to appreciate, like, having to think through visually what I want to say, and then trying to do it as quickly and sort of with as little effort on my end as possible.
I really enjoyed iSketch. You know, whenever I played it, I never got super into it.
That was a timed thing with like a whole room full of people.
Which was great.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely a different thing, but it's definitely in that same kind of like words with friends kind of category where asynchronous kind of take as much time as you want. Apparently, a lot of people who if you play like with random people, they'll just spell out the word.
Yeah. Which... Fuck that. I wish that there was a way for their software to detect that and then euthanize those people.
Okay, so but this is the same thing. Like, so both your impulses and my impulses when we saw it were like, why don't you have a time limit? Why aren't they getting bonus points for solving it quickly? Like, why all of these things, right? And it's made me step back and be like, okay, you know,
this is a game for girls.
Well, okay, so of the 12 games that I'm playing, eight of them are with girls.
Well, are people pretending to be girls? So that you'll
these are all people I know
picks.
In real life. So
it could still be.
Sure. I guess for some of them I've not like checked.
How many of the girls that you are currently involved in games of draw something with have you slept with? I know. You can't actually say that out. Although they don't know. None of them know which others. Are you actually
going to
check?
I was going to.
Nice.
How do I get out of this? So, this is
first. Hang up on Riff.
Yeah, I was going to say this is complicated because I don't want to. We're using the phone to be able to communicate across vast different oceans. We're not across different oceans.
No, I mean we would. There's no way to be across different oceans from somebody, right?
Sure.
Like,
I mean, I could
between me and him, it's the Pacific, but between him and me, it's the Atlantic. Which I guess both of those things are true, depending on which direction you go between us and Riff. So yes, all seven oceans are between us. Somehow.
I've only slept with one of them.
Oh, well.
So,
That's a disappointing end to that story.
Sorry.
Man. Riff. How many games are you playing with women that you've slept with?
At the moment, none. I don't do a lot of multiplayer phone games.
What else have you been playing, Kevin?
Minecraft.
Besides, yeah,
I've been continuing to play Minecraft.
Right. I have also been playing a lot of Minecraft.
Oh yeah, you like got in there and actually like
I got established on our little server.
Yeah, yeah. I saw you get killed by a skeleton and then suffocate in a wall.
I didn't really suffocate
in a wall.
I suffocated in I think a tree that didn't load until I was standing in it.
Ouch.
Yeah, I was just like walking and I saw half a tree and I was like, "That's weird. Why is there half a tree?"
Wow. Cool. That would piss me off to be killed by a glitch.
I knew right where it was, and I just ran back. No, I didn't run back. I got in a goddamn shitty boat and
sailed back.
Yeah, well, tried, and then
the boat exploded.
In the process of getting out of the boat, I destroyed it, and then I just...
So, since last week, I have started enchanting stuff, and I can say that the enchanting system is some horse shit. Pretty seriously.
Yeah, it's slightly better than it was. They rejiggered the curve to take into account like how many you know, how many whatevers you have to spend, so that if you're going for a level 50 enchant, it only takes 10 minutes instead of 2 hours to get one.
Wow.
But it's still pretty balls.
I mean, the fact that the way that you get a particular level of enchantment is to just keep clicking on the thing until that level shows up on the list. Like,
I don't understand it
that
at
is,
all.
That is just such an elementary thing that you don't do in a video game.
Yeah, they, like, well, anymore. I mean, it's like rolling for stats. That used to be the rule and not the exception. And now it has, it like clearly.
Right,
this
but
is
no one, sort of, no one would do that now.
Sure.
Right.
It is. I mean, it was a bunch of weird
it is
choices.
So
it's,
weird.
It's kind of awesome to see them developing a game, because they're sort of learning lessons again that people have already learned. So like,
but that doesn't seem to be a thing that they care about.
I don't know. I'm curious whether they will revamp it. Like, the game has gotten so much better over the past year that I'm wondering if I walked away and came back to it in another year, whether it would they would have fixed all of these problems too, you know?
Yeah. It's also weird because they, you know, those guys probably don't play a lot of Minecraft. Certainly not as much as we do.
Yeah.
Right, so...
I mean, that was another thing that I was really disappointed with was, like, they introduced NPC villages and the, like, houses and stuff are just kind of awful. They generated some sort of archetypes for things.
Well, that's something I think that they're still working on, because the most recent version included a lot of updates to the NPC stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a
keep going with that.
There was like a church tower that was like more interesting, but like also just a hut that was so small that like it didn't even make any sense for it to be a thing. Yeah.
But they've added all stuff like if you add more houses of your own to a village, it will
spawn
figure
more.
Out. Yeah, it will figure out how many houses there are now and spawn more dudes. And for every so many dudes there are, it'll spawn an iron golem to protect them from the naturally occurring zombie invasions and, you know, things like that.
Zombies
so
invade
I think,
NPC villages?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They like it. It, I think, I don't know exactly how it works, but some nights it will just spawn a whole ton of zombies, like, in or near the village.
I think it's when there's the blood moon.
Yeah.
That might be in Terraria, though. No, during a blood moon, zombies can break down doors in Terraria. Yeah. You know, I still, like, my only interaction with a village in Minecraft has been asking on the multiplayer server today, hey, are they going to get pissed off if I take all this wheat? And them telling me, nope. So then I just took some wheat. Like, okay. I still... That's a feature that I feel like adds nothing.
What is?
The NPC villages. Like, the fact that there are these NPCs that have any function.
Yeah, but they will eventually have a function.
They're you can't even harvest their clothing.
Say what?
It's
you
fun
can't even
to
harvest
watch
their
them.
Clothing with shears.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's true.
Are you
it's
about
fun
a size
to watch
16?
Them meander around and pretend to converse with each other and stuff. You know, the way that, I don't know, like watching an ant farm or whatever.
I guess. I mean, at least when you're watching an ant farm, you eventually see them have sex.
Well, maybe that's in 1.2.4.
Okay. What else, Kevin? Just Minecraft.
Those two are the two things that I've basically been playing. Draw something in Minecraft. I guess Move the Box. I was super happy because I had finished all the levels and put it in my completed games folder, and then there was an update where they added 168 more levels.
Huh.
I was like, fuck. So I'm working my way through those.
So 10 packs of 16.8 levels each?
Yes.
How did that work?
I don't know.
What's 168 divisible by?
24. Two? It was like a bunch of stuff. It might not have been 168. It was a multiple of 24.
All right. Well, no, 168 might make sense.
Yeah, 168 is 7 24. Yeah. So
all right.
I actually remember that number.
Cool. What about you, Riff?
What about me?
What other games you've been playing?
Let's see. It was Minecraft and Infinity Blade 2 and Groove Coaster. I think that's about it.
Okay.
I read a bunch of Grant Morrison Batman comics.
Is that a game?
No.
Grant Morrison versus Batman comics. In Groove Coaster, have you bought any additional songs or anything? I don't even remember how that game works.
No, I haven't. I haven't gotten to the end of whatever songs come with it, so I don't even know if there are extra ones to be bought.
It's surprisingly hard. Maybe it's because I'm a white dude and I got no rhythm. Or maybe it's because my feet are guilty.
I haven't been playing. I played a bunch of levels on easy and thought they were pretty easy, and then found a song that I really liked and played it on normal and beat it in an unlocked hard, and then I had to play it like 4 more times to beat hard.
And then you didn't like it anymore.
It's still a pretty good song. I was a little bored of it by then, though. But I wouldn't say it's a. It doesn't seem like a hard game until you start deliberately playing on hard. Or maybe the songs get a lot harder as you go. I don't know how far I am through it.
It's always weird to me. Like, I don't understand where the songs come from when you play, like, DDR in the arcade. Are they all just, like, Japanese songs that are on the radio?
Mostly pop Japanese songs.
For the games?
I've occasionally seen a song in, like, a DDR game that I actually knew of outside of the game, but it's pretty rare.
Mm. Japan, man.
Sure.
Is techno still a big thing there? You know, now when Dance Dance Revolution is a contemporary game that people are playing.
Well, but I mean, in the future, it's going to be the thing that is used to settle disputes, life and death disputes.
Now it's all Skrillex, wub, wub, wub.
Have any of you guys gone to see the FP yet?
Sorab told us it was terrible.
The FP.
Sort of like post-apocalyptic movie where conflicts are resolved with DDR.
Yeah.
Except it's called like...
Seriously? I thought you were just making
meat
a joke.
Or something.
No. This is some movie that... when I first saw the trailer, I thought it was a joke, and apparently it was actually released as a movie.
Our buddy who saw it said it was really terrible, and then he was really glad that we didn't go with him to see it.
Yeah. I was not surprised given the trailer. It looked like terribly acted and the script looked pretty dumb. So yeah,
that exactly describes all of the video games that we have been playing.
Yes.
I pledged to a Kickstarter for a game called The Banner Story, Saga, which looks pretty good.
What kind? I keep seeing buzzings about that. What kind of game is it?
I believe it is a Final Fantasy Tactics sort of game.
Lame.
F that right in its B. It's Banner.
Looks really, really pretty, though. It's got that sort of, I don't know, that sort of Don Bluth sort of animation, cell animation.
Oh, I did see that. That does look pretty. It looks kind of Betrayal at Krondorly.
Yeah, or like Myth the Fallen Lords, except not real time.
Okay.
And it's Vikings, and Vikings are awesome.
Cool. That game is where they're all Vikings. What's in the news, Kevin?
Well,
we don't have the printout.
I haven't read it off a screen.
In this godforsaken wasteland that doesn't even have my printer.
Well, you know, eventually, eventually they'll just make printers built into laptops, but that's never going to happen.
It's probably not. I don't think I would want that. I keep thinking, I feel like a fucking old man because I am, no, actually, I feel like fucking an old man. Hold on, I'll be right back. I feel like an old man because I have this one particular kind of printer that I like.
Yeah.
Right? It is like
dot just matrix
the,
printer.
Yes, it is a dot matrix printer, the HP LaserJet, HP DeskJet 300. I'm sorry.
Does it use the paper where you have to rip the edges off?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Green. It's got green bar paper. No. It is the fucking personal laser printer that HP started making. It's like the LaserJet 1012 or something. And Windows 7 just doesn't support it. And nobody has written a driver for Windows 7. And I think it's just because HP realized they made a thing that was so good that nobody would ever need to buy another printer again. So they're like, well, we can't have that shit. Let's just make it not supported on modern OSs. There's a fucking fake driver that you can use for it. But then it just every once in a while... prints out a one sentence error message instead of your document.
PC load letter.
I don't remember what it says. something. It's funny. There's a sheep in my printer.
So Blizzard announced Diablo 3's release date.
Right.
May 15th.
Cool. I am stoked.
I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, definitely. That is, I realized that the other day that and Lollipop Chainsaw are the only two games I can think of that are coming out that I'm interested in playing, except for things that are on Kickstarter.
Like, so you're only interested in playing games that will come out in a year.
Game. Yeah.
Well,
which
I mean,
is what the hell? There's got to be some more stuff coming out.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. You just don't know about it.
I kind of don't get. There seems to be some sentiment among the people that I listen to that they're like, oh man, I sure hope that Torchlight 2 comes out before Diablo 3 and totally feeds Blizzard their own lunch. And I really don't get that because
yeah, no, I mean
Torchlight was.
It was okay. It was fun. It originated the shitty wizard joke, but I mean it wasn't as good a game as Diablo, certainly.
Yeah, I don't think that Torchlight was as good as Diablo 1, much less Diablo 2.
It's a bunch of Blizzard haters, right? Like, isn't that just what everything is all about? Like, everyone wants Blizzard to fail because it's the big dog.
Just haters and people wanting to root for the underdog and root against the big guy.
Why is everybody in this story dogs all of a sudden?
I don't know, dog. Zynga bought Omgpop. That we already talked about that a little bit. Apparently,
when's Zynga gonna buy Blizzard? Finally, make those games good.
I don't know.
Okay, so it's still dogs. Fucking Zynga's dog on their icon.
Yep. Sorry. Kickdogger had a couple of stories. So
that's like not a very popular website.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what demographic you're in, I guess.
Sure.
So Double Fine's Kickstarter finished, and they made $3.3 million. Well, they raised nice. $3.3 million. They're only going to see a little under $3 million of that before taxes. And then Wasteland 2's Kickstarter is over 100% funded, which their funding goal is $900,000.
Did they hit $1.5 million yet?
They as of the beginning of the recording of this podcast, they were at 1.45, so not quite. Yeah. They're almost certainly going to get there though.
Yeah. Which is what? That's a Mac OS port.
Yeah,
Mac OS port. Mac and Linux.
1.5, and then of course the Idle Thumbs Kickstarter.
My dad has a Kickstarter actually, although it's not video game related.
Really?
He's I don't know exactly what his title is, if he's like producer or what, but he's working with this director Jeff Monahan to put together a movie of various actors reading all of Shakespeare's sonnets, and so they've got a Kickstarter for that.
Huh.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Like, are they like famous actors or?
They're trying to get some famous actors.
Well, it depends on how many people contribute to the Kickstarter.
I probably should not say the two particularly famous names I know because I don't know if they're 100%.
Oh, you're not allowed to know. You only know because you're a Hollywood insider.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, but there's a couple good names possibly associated with it.
You know who they could get to play Iago? Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah. True.
I'm pretty sure that Iago is not a character in Shakespeare's sonnets, though.
Yeah,
so,
not actually in the sonnets.
Well, they could get Summer Glau to play a summer's day.
You can search Kickstarter for Shakespeare's sonnets, and that should pop up.
What else?
Oh, there's that one sonnet about how old men shouldn't fuck young ladies. I know that. I just read it once in a thing. Then I played the theme song from Gilligan's Island on the accordion. That was my final. That was my final project for my Shakespeare class.
Really?
Yep. It was part of a larger thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Elder Scrolls might be an MMO.
Huh.
So it is definite that Bethesda and like another company are working together on an MMO.
Okay.
They have not confirmed anywhere what the IP is. A lot of people are hoping that it's a Fallout one, but there was some sort of like leak that it was actually Elder Scrolls.
I think a Fallout MMO would be significantly harder to pull off.
Doesn't Interplay or somebody still own the rights to the Fallout MMO?
It resolved. That whole conflict resolved somehow, and I don't remember which direction it resolved in.
I don't know either. So the rumor that had like a bunch of details to it was that it was going to be set 1,000 years before any of the other Elder Scrolls games. So it was a prequel to everything else.
Oh, you know what else I forgot that I played? I played about 10 minutes of EverQuest.
Oh, the free-to-play
route. Yeah, right after they went free-to-play, and it was broken as fuck, I think, really? Just because there were so many people
downloading and
flooding into it. Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, okay, you want to start playing this game? Go ahead and download this 8-gig client, which was like, I bet you could have figured out how to not do that, guys.
Eight gigs.
Yeah, 8 gigs.
That couldn't have been how big it was back in the day.
No, I mean, I think it fit on a single CD-ROM back in the day, but you get EverQuest and 16 expansions
right. When
you do this, but it's like,
I don't think you need to download
those. My fucking EverQuest character from 1999 is still...
Alive.
Was still on there. I remembered what server he was on, and it's just, yep, there's good old Gay Russ. I named him Garrus, G-A-E-R-U-S, because I thought that was a good Viking name, a good barbarian name, and then all of my friends just kept referring to me as Gay Russ the whole time that I was playing.
You're good friends.
Yeah, they were real pals. Real pals.
Skyrim's 1.5 update is apparently going to have arrow and magic kill cams, which is some of the stuff that came out of their like week-long developer jam or whatever, so it's possible that they might do a bunch of other
stuff. It came out of the week-long developer jam that they did for Fallout 3.
Yeah.
Are there going to be gory eyeball explosions?
Dude, I don't know.
Ooh. Can you get a headshot
and an eye shot? You get like triple damage for eye shots? I don't know. So that's cool.
Oh, I've also been playing a lot of eye shots.
Oh, yeah. And then...
Remember iShoot that you didn't like?
Yeah,
that I played the shit out of? I should re-download that game.
Pretty dumb.
What? Tanks are awesome.
Sure. I would rather play Worms, I think, than the, like, tank games.
Than the same game, but with tanks.
Yeah, but Worms is cool.
You only like things that are cute.
Yeah, that's true. And then something that I thought was kind of sad was that Encyclopedia Britannica stopped printing.
Right.
After 244 continuous years of new editions, the 2010 edition is the last one.
I mean, it kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, they went from, like, I think 120,000 volumes, 120,000 sets sold in the 80s to they only printed 6,000 sets of the 2010, and 4,000 of them are still in a warehouse. So. Wow. I think they will probably sell, given that they are like now a collector's item, as being the last one ever. But
yeah, I kind of want one now.
Yeah, that's what you need is more heavy shit.
It's 170 pounds. 170 pounds of books.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's almost as much as I weigh.
So, yeah.
Maybe I mean, it knows a lot more than you too, which is
you could try to get more efficient. You could bench press the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Britannica. The Encyclopedia Britannica. The Arcatraz. It's just that book about everything that goes on inside Tempest Keep.
Yeah.
World of Warcraft, guys. Remember?
Woo!
Remember the Burning Crusade?
Ugh, Burning Crusade.
You get those. I was trying to get a totem out of some cache.
Oh, right.
Cache of the Legion, I think, in the Britannica, in the Arcatraz. Heroic Arcatraz?
Yep.
I don't even know, man. Never got it.
The one that required two keys?
Yeah, you had to kill two bosses and combine the key fragments. And the first time I ran it after the Dungeon Finder launched, I was all excited because I was like, I finally get to run this thing. I got one of the key fragments and the other guy got one of the other key fragment, but we couldn't trade them because we were on different servers. And it was glitched out.
Yeah, that sucks.
Nightmare, man. Totally would have been in there, too.
Yep. Probably was.
Hindsight is 20/20. Do you think when they generate that dungeon, they generate the contents of the chest, or do you think they do it when you open it?
Probably when you open it.
I mean, they definitely generate the contents of chests in the world. They're stored statically.
On open time?
Because you can... No, I don't think that they do. Because you can open that chest after somebody has opened it, taken some of the stuff out of it. Sometimes you find a chest in the world, and it would have in it would be like one medium leather or whatever.
Depends, because a lot of the time, everyone who loots the chest gets what is statically defined inside it, right? Like the bear mount in one of those troll.
So you can ride bear back.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the real girlfriend experience.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Kevin, I'm single. I'm black, and I got that dope dick.
Yep.
That's what I heard today. It's true of somebody.
So, assignments.
Yes, assignment. Thatdopedick.com.
Dear Esther.
You know what? I had played the first, like, 15 minutes. Actually, I played 17 minutes of this game, because Steam tells us things like this, before we left Arizona. And I was not at all excited about actually sitting down and playing through it. But once I sat down and played it, I actually liked it a lot.
Yeah?
Really?
Yep. Yeah. I got into it. I realized about probably 40% of the way in that I just sort of lost track of the fact that I was playing a video game, and it just sort of got, like, the experience just sort of got a hold of me, and now I'm just doing this thing. I stopped thinking about, like, I wonder how they decided on the pacing of these text reveals and stuff, you know, and I stopped taking notes, for instance, because it just didn't occur to me to take any notes.
I never got to that point. The ability to move was so slow that, like,
and you find one of the very few branches in the path that you can take, and you follow it down, and there's a dead end, and you have to turn around and slowly stroll back to the intersection.
Yeah.
This was one of the notes that I took, though. In almost all of those cases, there was a shortcut that you could only see when you were going backwards up the path. It was designed so that the branches that led to dead ends...
That's true at all.
Okay. Well, I mean, I found a bunch of them. There were a bunch of cases where I was like, ah, fuck, a dead end. Now I have to backtrack all this way, but I didn't. I only had to backtrack like a third of the way. The very first branch on the beach, there's the high path and the low path.
Yeah.
And then you take the low one, and it goes to a dead end. And then as you're walking back, there is a ramp that leads from the low path
up to the... Which, if you didn't take the high path, you can't get to the cave that's on the high path. Because you fall down if you try to go up the high path back to the cave.
Huh.
Right? So, like, that is not a true backtracking thing.
Oh. Well, I don't know. Because you walked so slow, I was 100% discouraged from exploring. I just went went where I went the first time. And I think that's the way that you're supposed to play it.
Even if you do go explore, there's really nothing to find.
All it is like more text, like hooks.
But it's more of the story, which is what the game is about. Like, revealing
and
finding
stuff.
Except
that it's
not
a real story either. Well, that was also pretty frustrating.
I just found it so little like a game. It was just a movie that you had to hold down W to see
all
of it.
My finger got sore having to hold down W the whole time.
The only things that bothered me about it being a video game, like, I liked being able to look around as I chose, as the stuff was going on.
Freaking
it was really
gorgeous.
Pretty. The only thing that I didn't like was the extent to which, like, it was not really well thought out as a video game, and you were constantly like, oh, I can't move because there's a fucking ankle-high rock that just happens to have a slope that's
too steep. Or those barbed wire fences that come up to your ankle, and you can't just...
I died 30 seconds into the game and probably 40 times.
Really?
Yeah. The first thing I did was just, like, what happens if I go into the water?
Just drown, yeah.
I don't know if you'd try that ever. It's actually kind of neat. There's a bunch of flashes of things that you can see as you're, like, dying, basically, that are, like, other parts of the game and the backstory and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What in your guys' interpretation? I'm gonna go first.
Okay.
But in a sentence, this is what I think the game is about.
Okay.
It is about a woman who is killed by kidney stones, dislodged from her syphilitic hermit husband when he is run over by a drunk chemist.
Except it turned out the guy wasn't drunk.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that it can say, is that he wasn't actually drunk.
I assume the woman died in the car crash.
So did you guys all get the Esther Donnelly reveal at the end?
Yeah, Paul Jacobson.
Okay. So in the last, they mix those together. Like, but Jacobson, like, does the story of Jacobson take place hundreds of years before the story of Donnelly? Are you Donnelly?
You
had no idea.
I thought, part of my problem was that the the textual bits were so few and far between that, like, I kind of forgot about them by the time that I got to the next one, right? It was so hard to keep the narrative in my head while I was walking around.
And I think
so
it is less about narrative than about a bunch of evocation of imagery around a an idea that they maybe developed and maybe they didn't.
Yeah.
When they put this together.
Because insofar as it being a narrative, it was completely opaque.
In the part where you are underwater and out of phase briefly for a while, what was there for you guys?
Just the cars. I didn't see anything else, at least.
Okay. So when I did there was an overpass. There was like a highway with a sign with no cars on it at all and a hospital bed.
Oh.
Huh.
So I saw the aftermath of the accident when I was down there.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I saw two cars, and you see the freeway sign. And...
Oh, wow. So I just saw a hospital bed.
Okay, that's interesting.
And most of the things, you saw this GDC talk about the way that they did a lot of this stuff,
Because I knew a bunch of the technology behind it, I was very aware of it while I was playing, and I wish I did not have that. I wish I'd played this before.
Yeah, when we were talking to Chris Remo last night had played it, and when you told him that a lot of that stuff was randomly assembled, he had no idea and was like, oh, fuck, now I got to go play that again.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm curious what his interpretation would be on a second playthrough.
I deliberately only played it once so that I could see how our experiences compared. Like, I don't know that I will play it again because I don't know that I need or want to see the skeleton of it like that.
So
I did notice that I had a crash near the end, and I loaded it back up to that chapter marker and got some voiceovers that I hadn't seen hadn't heard the first time.
Yeah. If you want the technical aspects of it, each time it does a vocal cue, it's picking between one of four random passages that it will read to you. And they were written with the idea of evoking imagery and like theme rather than narrative. Mind, which is sort of like
it was.
What they
were
it was
for. Definitely very. I mean, I thought they hit the. It looked fantastic, and I thought they hit the tone wonderfully. It was very moody, I really want these guys to make a Myst-like game. I would like to be able to freely explore instead of just walking down this linear path. I would like to be able to discover clues and for there to be a mystery for me to figure out. And I don't know, some interaction, you know?
I mean, I think that in a game like Myst, you want more closure than I want in a thing like this. Right? Like,
you want this to be open-ended?
Well, okay, so we get in arguments about this sometimes I don't think it is important that the guys who made this game know what the story is. Right. I think they produce some details so that this becomes a work that is an interaction between them and the person playing the game. And it's, you know,
to me, I think that that's one of the things that made it less satisfying to me is that it just felt hollow because it wasn't actually a thing.
But I think that the fact that you knew that going in, I kind of knew that going in, but I just decided, you know what, as I sarcastically always tell people, open your fucking heart, man. Sure. Just let let this thing be what it is and don't be cynical about it. You know, like take a cue from Jesse Thorne. Embrace the new sincerity. Like, you can still be kind of a dick when you need to be, but don't be a dick for no reason, right? Like, don't be a dick to ideas.
Yeah, I definitely think I think it's very successful at being what they intended it to be.
Sure, sure.
I just don't find that particular thing personally to be very interesting.
What do you think about it at a $10 price point?
I think that's fair.
I don't mind paying that.
No, but we have a lot of discretionary income.
Yeah, I think it was probably a $5 game.
Yeah. I mean, it was as long as a movie.
Yeah.
And it was as good as some movies that I've seen. So I feel like I don't mind paying movie ticket price for that experience. And I could play it again if I wanted to.
Yeah.
You also said that a lot of the when there were insertions of incongruous things in the game, they were those were also often selected from a random set of things.
If you heard like weird random like radio static and that kind of thing, you were probably at a point where there was some sort of random object or pile of things inserted. So did you guys all see the paper boats? Was that a thing that was in all of them? Okay. Were there a lot of like hospital pans filled with surgical equipment?
And a lot of like
sonogram. There was a photograph that I was sad that I couldn't pick up and get a closer look at it.
There was, I found a bunch of photographs in like little cave inlets in different places where the, like along that candle trail, there were like a bunch of little mini caves. Did you guys see the guy standing on the cliff?
Yes.
That was frustrating.
Yeah, it was.
Because like
there's a point at which there is a figure moving along the cliff ahead of you.
Yeah. And then you get there and he's gone.
Yeah, there's nothing there to look at. There. It's at the part right where you round the corner and see like a buoy, like a lit buoy floating in the ocean.
Oh, mine. And the guy I saw was much further down.
Oh. Okay. It was in the buoy chapter. It was that overlook where you go out on the left of a cliff and the shipwrecks are all below you. Yeah. And like there was just a guy. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's like a guy moving along the cliff there.
So maybe that's different. Maybe there's different guys in different places.
No. I'm assuming that all of the like chalk designs and the stuff that's written, like the story of Paul on the road to Damascus.
Yeah.
That's all the same. Maybe. I'm guessing. A lot of neuron drawings.
Yeah, like
drawings
a lot of neurons.
Yeah, the neurons and the electrical engineering symbols, diagrams.
Like, from the coffee cup of the sweaty chemist guy that they describe. Yeah,
I never heard about that.
Okay. So, I mean, there's one point where he describes the chemist, who's just a guy like whose coffee cup is sticky and it's got like a chemical symbol on the outside of it.
No, never heard about that.
Okay. So, I mean, that's weird.
My story was very much like portraying this as the running theme was like this was the protagonist sort of taking a trip through his own body. And like. He had, you know, he had started at the site of his broken femur and the site of the infection, and was traveling through the bloodstream to the heart of the island and himself. Like that was a pretty common theme.
He kept describing the island as his body.
Yeah.
Did you get the thing where he talks about having chosen to be cremated instead of buried?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, so there's like a lot of stuff that we saw.
Yeah.
That was very different, and that's cool. I like that.
Sure.
I
don't begrudge it. I would probably play through it again just to see what a second playthrough would be like. I just wish I could move faster.
It's not like it takes long.
Yeah.
Half an hour.
I had this weird moment where I got kind of scared by the game because there's a point where you're in the caves where you have to walk across these wet rocks on a real steep slant, and because I have done that in real life at times when I'm like, oh god, it's like I am so fucking exhausted and everything hurts and I have to walk across these slippery rocks and if I fall down I'm going to fucking die.
Like, you don't actually
you fall into the water place. But I'm saying in real life when I did this, it was like
you did
there are a handful of moments when we've been out in the wilderness where it's like, okay, I have to do this. Like, I have to be careful here or I am going to die. Like, this is how people die, is by not being careful in situations like this. And that just, like, that just sort of gut-wrenching feeling came back, was evoked entirely.
Sure.
At that point where I had to walk across that thing. It was crazy. Like, you remember the thing that I'm talking about in the Grand Canyon, right? Like, when we climbed up in those waterfalls. Like, shit was nuts. Another thing that I wrote down in my early playthrough was, I kind of wish that, so when something is being read and there are also subtitles, I cannot not read ahead, but I cannot turn off the subtitles either. And I hate that about myself.
I turn the subtitles off really fast.
Okay.
I think I should have, because it was just distracting to me. I didn't get anything extra out of having them on there.
I get afraid that I'm going to miss something if I don't have them on.
But you know, it's not really important because you could probably have missed that entire audio cue.
Sure, yeah, because they didn't happen to play it for you. I mean, I'm sure that I got a fraction of the content that you guys got by not comprehensively exploring branches and stuff.
I think I probably, you know, unless I missed something, I think I probably explored 85% of the map, just because like there was some stuff that I didn't get to.
Yeah, there is. I started out exploring fairly comprehensively, but I eventually gave up on that. I think once I got to the cave and started seeing like multiple different ways that I could go, I just kind of gave up and just started going.
It was
in whatever direction it seemed like a good way to go, and it got me to the end.
It was really frustrating getting to a point and then not having there be some sort of narrative reward.
Yeah,
like that when that there's that one part of the cave where there's like the bridge over the river, and you can walk to either end of the river, and there's just nothing going on.
There's nothing there.
That was super discouraging, and it takes that. That's the thing where there's no shortcut. You walk down to either end, and you just have to walk back. There's nothing. And that was really annoying.
I was frustrated. Like, I wish that the terminals of those dead ends had at least been story drops.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I
was. But if they had been, then I would have felt
compelled to
check all of them out. And I'm glad that I wasn't. I'm glad that I didn't.
Yeah. I'm curious how they decided on the layout and the path. Because it is so linear in so many ways. To have these nonlinear sections is really interesting.
Let me ask you, there's a bit when you're first going in towards the interior of the island, there's an area where you're coming down a hill with hill goes up inaccessibly on your right, and there's a ravine on your left, and you get down to the bottom of the ravine, and you can either turn around to the left and go back along the bottom of the ravine in this river, and that leads you to the house, or you can keep going the way you were going, and that goes to a cave. Do you know where I'm talking about?
I don't think so.
Because the first time I played through, I got up to the entrance of that cave, and I saw that there was like glowing writing or something in there, but I crashed. And then when I got back to that point, I went the other way instead, and that took me to the house and the crashed freighter. And I tried to go back to that previous intersection, but once you pass through that stage load, you can't go back.
I went down to the right, wondering what I missed there. I went down to the right, and there's like a little cave with some writing in it. And there's like a little crashed ship over there, but there was nothing like that. Was the first time I had ever seen any of the neuron stuff. So that was my first introduction
to
that.
Is that what's in there? Okay.
Cause you can see that cave, from the very first cave that you can see if you go up to if you follow the high path. And then take there'll be a cave on the right, and you can walk through it. And then there's a hole, and you can see the cave on the far end. But there's like a little shipwreck there, and you can't get to that because the water is too deep, which was weird.
Yeah, I remember getting really frustrated the first time I tried to mess around getting across water at all, because it's like you could do it,
and it's
like
slower.
You expect it to be like Skyrim, where it's like, I know I can make it across this, but then you remember that you can't jump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not having any verbs at all other than look and move was...
You couldn't even choose when to turn the flashlight on and off.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's... Yeah, you know. It's okay, right? Like, it's not every video game has to be every video game.
No,
right?
I know. Like, it was just interesting. Yeah. It was just interesting to feel so constrained.
So barely a video game. I also feel like...
The ending, I felt like... They did not make it clear enough that that wasn't just a crash.
Oh, the when it faded.
Yeah,
to black.
It fades
to
black, but you can still hear the fucking sound. If it had faded to black and the sound had also shut off, then it would have seemed like, this is just how it ends. And, you know, it's like, oh, right, you're dead, whatever. But the fact that you could still hear the sound. Also, apparently, if you quick save and then quick load at that point, you can see again.
Huh.
So
I didn't even know that there was a quick save.
Well, because I mean, I think it's just in the end, like there's just some F keys that quick save and quick load. Well,
I think my experience would not have been substantially different if I'd watched a Let's Play of it instead of playing it myself.
I don't know about that.
Huh. I spent a lot of time looking around the environment and was really really happy that I got to see everything in as much detail as I got. And, like, the exploration of it was... I mean, I love exploring spaces.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. And I just felt like there wasn't any reward for doing it. Like, you see the house up on the top of the hill, and it looks really pretty and important because the sun is setting behind it. But you get up there, and there's nothing in it.
Well, I mean, what did you want? Like a sword? You know, I mean, like...
something? I don't know.
There were a bunch of
photographs on the wall? Or, when I got up there. I don't know. Something to see.
Like, the table was covered in books.
Yeah, there might, it's like scalpels and...
Did you go down to that one, like, the ravine that ended? And, there was just a... At least in mine, there was just, a bunch of books and clothes and stuff sort of scattered around.
I saw there was a ravine with like what looked like a suitcase and a lot of books scattered around.
I
didn't see clothes, but there were books. They were all the same book.
I found like a set of clothes neatly folded inside a cave.
I couldn't really examine them.
I didn't see. I never saw. It sounds like Zach had way more random or way more different random stuff than you and I did.
I found crashed. I found the like rusted out ruins of a car.
Yeah.
That both looked... it wasn't in a cave. It was on a beach.
Oh.
It both looked like it had been there for a really long time, and there was something that indicated like that the wreck had happened very recently.
There were a bunch of candles. Like, somebody clearly had been there just before you, I guess. And I got the impression that maybe it was you.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, at least in my version of it, it's like, you know, I have left my mark on this island by... painting all of this stuff on it, and I was like, oh, so
did you get the parts about the leaving the warning, the plague warning for ships so that they didn't stop there?
Something like the one of the very early things was like, you know,
carving the parallel white lines in the cliff so that ships know to stay away for a generation
or something like
just
that.
It's like a weird, I don't know. I you know, it's pretentious, right? It's pretentious, but like it's okay for like something that's supposed to be pretentious to be pretentious.
I feel like it has a lot of potential to be really interesting and have like a really cool narrative. Like, I could imagine a situation where you explore spaces and there's like effectively choose your own adventure kind of stuff that happens based on choices of what you explore first.
Like, and the gameplay would be your agency in the actual building. And I mean, even if it wasn't any more clear than this,
but you would have constructed it, you would have just been random. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, if it sort of tailors the story based on what you appear to be interested in, right? Like, are you going for the interesting, and maybe you can't go back, right? Like are you going for the interesting natural features? Or are you going for the interesting man-made features or whatever?
I mean, some of those games, like the Flash game that, in theory, you could only ever play once because it would lock you out of ever playing it again if you didn't reset your Flash thing. That was cool.
Did you play that more than once?
I did.
You asshole.
Yep.
You are an asshole, and I don't like you anymore.
Also, I figured out how to play Glitch Hiker again.
so we're going to go entirely the other direction for the next assignment. Apparently the 7-day roguelite contest, which is a thing that happens every year, just resolved. And I will post a link to it when I post this show in the assignment link, which I don't know if anyone can see that anywhere. Is that a thing that
we
shows
should post,
up?
We can post a link to it in the forums.
We can
forums.
Post a link to it in the forums, and we can post it to the Twitter. But there was a Rock, Paper, Shotgun post that listed like five of the highlights of the 7-day roguelite contest. I would like to play more than just those five, but I am at least going to play those five.
I'm
going to
play at least two of them.
Right. Some of them you just can't play on...
Three of them at least are playable on a Mac, and I'm excited. There's one called Fuel, which I'm excited about playing, and one called Fictional Roguelike, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, I'm going to list the names of them. One is called Sword in Hand.
One that one's kind of neat, because instead of being a character, you are the sword.
Fictional Roguelike. Yeah. I rule, you rule, we all rule, old school, high rule.
Yeah, I rule, you rule, we all rule, old school, high rule.
And then Gateway RL, which that one seems the least interesting to me.
Yeah. Of those five.
Yeah, of those five. Some of them you can't play on a Mac. Some of them you might be able to get a Linux version running on your Mac, but I don't
know. It's like Linux and Windows primarily. But I'm excited.
Huh. I just got either an inappropriate email or some spam from NewYorkChihuahuaBreeders.net. from the person who says that he will be my puppy counselor.
Nice.
And he has the perfect chihuahua pup for me. The perfect chihuahua pup for me is a dead chihuahua pup.
Whoa.
That I can eat in a hoagie.
Wow.
You call it a hoagie if it's a chihuahua. Yeah, anyway, that's the next assignment. All right, so I put out a call in the forums for some water and some listeners' mail, and what I said was, hey, guys, ask us some questions that are concise and to the point, and we can, do them. We can do them, and we don't have to spend a lot of time reading them.
Yeah.
Partially because I'm going to read them like this. Raiden Gray writes, why do you guys prefer computer gaming to console gaming? Is it something inherent to consoles in general? So for me, I can answer this very easily. I do not like navigating 3D spaces with a limited tool set like a controller. I am accustomed to WASD and mouse, and to the extent that I can get around things, I like to get around things using WASD and mouse. There are certain things that I would rather play. Like, I can't imagine playing, like, Geometry Wars not on a console. But almost every game that I have played and enjoyed on a console, I would rather have been playing it on a PC because...
Hmm. So is that just sort of a lexical thing that you've grown up with?
Yeah, it's just a controls thing. Yeah. It's that my PC is a thing that I use every day, so when I sit down at it, I don't have to wait an hour for some fucking percentage bars to go across, and I don't have to worry about whether the batteries in my mouse are charged, because there aren't any batteries in my mouse.
With a PC, I can play with a keyboard and a mouse, which I find very natural for most of the games that I like, and if I want to play with a controller pad, I can. Like, it's got every advantage, and as far as I can tell, no disadvantages.
Also, something that came up when I was talking about Dear Esther, quick save and quick load being a single key press away is so critical to me playing a lot of the sort of long term games that I play.
Yeah,
like a Skyrim. Can you quick save in Skyrim?
I don't really
riff.
Oh,
you played it on the PS3, right? Like, you play all of those games
on the
PS3. Which seems crazy to me.
Like, yeah, I don't really have any particular preference of PC over console. I prefer to play on my computer when possible, but I've been a Mac user for as long as I've been a computer user, so I just have gotten used to the fact that most of my gaming is going to be on a console.
Getting a dual boot computer has just opened up all these doors for gaming for me, which I don't know if that's a good thing. You know, it means I'm going to spend a lot more time playing a bunch more games, I think, than I would have probably have doing less work.
Oh, Bioshock Infinite. Okay, that's a third game that I'm waiting for to come.
All right.
Is that going to be console? It's going to be on
console.
It'll
be everywhere at the same time. Yeah,
it'll be on.
Well, not Mac.
You know what? After watching,
maybe not on Mac.
After watching the leaked footage of the new Walking Dead game from Telltale, I kind of want to play that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I've not been super enthusiastic about their stuff in the past. Like, I bought the season pass to the Back to the Future games, and I played the first one through, and then I played a few minutes of the second one, and then I was just like, the Walking Dead game seems neat.
I heard about it, like an earlier version of it that sounded really cool, but I think they went in a different direction.
I think it's gone through some phase changes over time. I don't know. It looked unlike anything that I had played before when I saw this. I didn't watch very much of it because apparently it was like just super leak. Like, this was not the thing that they wanted somebody to post, like 15 minutes of gameplay footage from the fucking game. Like, before it's even passed cert. We learned last night what that means. It was so embarrassing. We're talking to these guys and we're like, yeah, so we don't know fucking anything about the video games industry. When you say that your game is in cert, what does that mean? And then they explained it. It means that they've handed off their game to Microsoft, in this case, to see whether it's going to run. And they say, they will return it and say, okay, so this game, if the second player
is holding down B
and you pull the memory card out halfway through a save, your game does not gracefully
crash.
It gives the wrong error message when that happens. So redo it, and then you can run it.
You can try it again.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Sounded awesome.
Abysmal Mitten writes, would you rather a game be a world to explore like Skyrim or a story to experience like Half-Life? You know...
That's not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah, I was going to say both is definitely what I would prefer.
Half-Life, when I played it, at first,
it didn't feel like a story.
It did not feel... Well, it did feel like a story, but it didn't feel like there was a... It didn't feel constrained. It felt linear, but not constrained. Half-Life 2, and maybe this is just because compared to the time when I played Half-Life and the time when I played Half-Life 2, I was just a lot more savvy about game design. Half-Life 2 felt way, way more linear than Half-Life 1 did. And I don't think it was any more linear, right? I mean, I think you can have a little of both, and it's also okay for some games to be one and some games to be the other, right? Like, I think there's a mix of experiences that you want, and it's like you don't only want big worlds.
I mean, so I feel like worlds, you know, a world that is very worldly leaves itself open to, what is the word that I'm looking for? Like generative narrative, like stories.
Emergence.
That come, emergent narrative, right?
Yeah.
And like an authored narrative from a good author is usually really satisfying. And it's okay that world is constrained so that you stay within the narrative. And, you know, that's going to be a satisfying experience. But I think it's probably true that, you know, the Far Cry 2 style games are the ones that people are going to talk about more because they are sort of more...
Well, your experience... So this is an interesting thing about Dear Esther. We talked about it a lot, and the reason that we were able to talk about it a lot is because we each had different experiences of playing it. Whereas if we had all played Uncharted, that wouldn't have happened. And I mean, I would also say that, like, say, The Binding of Isaac, which is the game that I've gotten the most excited about of any game in a really long time, you know, I didn't play it as much as I played Skyrim, but, like...
In terms of hours.
If I had to guess, like, which of those games am I the most likely to come back to in a few years, I would guess The Binding of Isaac rather than Skyrim. Like, I'm... Huh. Like, once another... Well, once
much,
another
much easier
Skyrim,
to get back into it.
Well, sure it is. And once another Skyrim comes out, it is going to be so different and so much better because it exists as this big sweeping scope thing. And it's like, you know, I would not play Oblivion now because I'm like, oh, God, this is just so... These systems are so shitty compared to Skyrim or whatever. Although a lot of people felt that Morrowind was better than Oblivion, but I think those are all dicks. Sorry if you're one of them, dear listener. But, like, The Binding of Isaac is neither a world to explore nor a story being told. It's, like, it is a bunch of mechanics.
It is both, though, right? Because it's, like, you are literally exploring room to room a little dungeon thing.
Yes, but
it is this very powerful narrative construct that's dropping you into.
Well, it's a very powerful atmospheric construct, right? Like, it's not...
It's an actual story, right? Like, it's... The backstory, like that first two or three minute intro cinematic or whatever, is a really potent story. And then you're like playing out the sort of the narrative fallout of that. Cause it's, I mean, the way that I think we agreed to interpret it was that like this is sort of all in that little kid's head, right?
Yeah.
And like,
my interpretation of that has just been like this is a game that represents like the sort of manifestation of the horrors experienced by this kid from a little kid's perspective, which is why everything is like gross or, you know, like a very incomplete misunderstanding of sex and and gender differences and stuff like and you know that's but like sure. So in a way it's a little bit of both, but it's certainly not, you would not describe it as a sandbox game, right?
No.
It is not like a Skyrim. You wouldn't describe it as that. There needs to be a different vocabulary for describing an open world game like Skyrim and a game without a particular directed narrative. Like, I don't know. Even less so than like. I mean, I guess your narrative is first you do level one and then you do level two and then you do level three and then.
But
you
I mean,
do
like
four,
open
right?
world, like Second Life is an open world game because that like literally can create everything there.
Would not,
whereas
I think,
Skyrim
go so
still
far
has
to
a...
say the Second Life is a game.
Okay. Fair enough, but Skyrim doesn't have like Skyrim does have limitations. It's got a constraint. It's just a really large set of constraints.
Sure,
and all the narrative elements are scripted. It's not like there's not a lot of emergent stuff going to be happening in that, right? Like,
no, but I don't know that there can be unless you can write genuine intelligence into an NPC, which you can't yet.
Who knows?
I mean, someday you can.
We could do Dear Eliza.
dear Dr. Spezzo. That game would have been better if everything had been read in the Dr. Spezzo voice.
I don't know about that.
Shop Troll writes, what are your thoughts on all the shakeups in games journalism lately? Creation of Penny Arcade's report by poaching Ben Kuchera, formation of Vox Games by poaching top talent from several other sites / blogs, Kotaku's new programming schedule approach, the Idle Thumbs and Venus Patrol Kickstarters, and Giant Bomb's acquisition by CBS. I don't know. I am generally not interested in traditional and mainstream games media.
Yeah.
Which is, I get almost all of my games news and sort of discussion from podcasts, which are basically entirely sort of off the cuff and not the and ones, the ones like, that I've listened to that were like One Up Yours was okay for a while, but any big news outlet like that, like the stuff that they produce is so sanitized and so in bed with the money that it's of
little
of
value.
No value yeah. to me. And so I like the formation of Vox Games insofar as my only exposure to it has been a podcast that has Travis and Justin and Griffin McElroy, and it is a podcast about video games. What I fucking hate is that they bleep out the swear words in that podcast, which just drives me up a fucking wall. That just leads me to believe that like whoever is in charge of distributing that podcast just does not understand what podcasts are for or doesn't understand the like environment that those guys need in order to be like, I wonder if this is a thing where it's like, stop swearing. And they're like, fuck you. And they're like, all right, we'll keep swearing. We're just going to bleep it out. But that drives me fucking nuts. I don't know anything about what happened with Giant Bomb. I just saw like, isn't it weird that now Jeff Gerstmann works for GameSpot again or is in their offices or whatever. But I haven't listened to a podcast of theirs since that happened. So
yeah,
I don't
here.
Know. Apparently they're scrambling and going crazy. I did not know anything about the Penny Arcade report. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's because of the extent to which you just cannot trust the traditional media about these things.
I mean, do you think this is indicative of things outside of just video games? Like,
oh, sure.
So many news stories that I've read, I've been like, oh, so you're basically just reiterating the press release that you were sent. You know, is like a huge, like, especially anything about like a new product or whatever is almost all about that. Like, very few things are, we went and saw what this was firsthand, and here's our like reviews or our thoughts or whatever. It's almost all like,
yeah. I mean, I feel like I don't seek out that kind of thing at all. And I mean, part of it is just I like to be sort of a Philistine, and I don't pay any attention to current events at all. And so my news is all trustworthy because I get all the news I need from the weather report, Kevin. And
right.
The weather report is me looking at the sky. Yeah, and Metafilter. You know what? I fucking trust Metafilter. I trust Metafilter. I don't trust them to not be biased, but I
right.
trust them to not
to
be shills, right?
Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, I wonder how long it's going to be before some savvy advertising agency just starts building up some cred in a Metafilter community and then starts planting stories that way, right? Or maybe they're already doing it.
I think there are enough cynical users on Metafilter that would not last long before it was spotted and
before it was
outed.
Yeah, really? I mean, like, yeah. Well, I mean, maybe fucking Pepsi has a spy at Snopes, and like, turns out that shit really will kill you if you drink it after you eat Pop Rocks. But they don't want anybody to know that. So, like, this guy has dedicated his life to not blowing that cover.
Is it not just Barbara Mikkelsen or whatever?
Dude, I don't know.
I thought it was always just her.
But I mean, it's Usenet, right? Like the. The whole Urban Legends, like the whole group of people who are like debunking Urban Legends are like, you know, professors and scientists and shit from Usenet. Like that whole thing, like
Mythbusters?
Yes, they are Mythbusters. They're scientists and professors. One of them is a professor of mustache having.
Mustache.
And the other one is a cannonball scientarian.
Hmm.
He
has a minor in beret wearing.
Yes. Let's see. Casey Wiederman says, how do you guys feel about how much your personal lives bleed out from all the podcasts you do? In demonstrating this for Space Piranha, I said, yeah, the dudes have girlfriends too. Riff has Jenny and Hot Stuff has battery drawer. Do you think it's important to separate art from artist? Why or why not? I don't remember the joke about your girlfriend being the battery drawer.
I don't
battery drawer?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that means.
Is it that one that's really hard to get to because you have to open the stove?
The stove. That's the thing I thought about. And I was like,
see, here's the problem.
That
with
was
a
really
like,
short relationship, so I don't. You're either way behind.
Here's a problem with a dude like Casey Wiederman, or like going back a little further, a naked Jew. If we ever meet Casey Wiederman, he is gonna know so much shit about us we don't even know anymore. Yeah. Because the personal details that we reveal are things that we just have forgotten by the time. I mean, I guess it's a little weird, but I have never... I always really strongly rejected the idea, and I was always like... I was always sort of outcast in work environments because of this. I have always very strongly rejected the idea that you should be different people depending on the context that you're in. Hmm. And that has just always seemed like so much work to me to maintain those boundaries. It's like trying to lie. And you just have to keep track of this entirely separate story.
In certain circumstances.
Sure, fair enough. And I've learned the value of that.
You know,
Roy pointed out that I used to just immediately start swearing when I met a new person, and I was like,
especially if they were four.
I've decided to stop doing that. Although I never liked swearing around kids, sure. And I always yell at other people for swearing
and
around kids, which
and
is
that's a
weird
thing. That is a context in which you are being different.
I guess, but right. I'm not a different person because I'm even when I'm not around kids, I'm still a guy who doesn't swear around kids.
Okay.
Right.
Sure.
Anyway,
so when you're, but so, like,
but you know what? I was immediately put at ease after meeting Chris Remo by him saying "fuck" probably 10 times in the first 5 sentences he uttered to us. I was like, "All right, I know that it is okay for me to say fuck as much as I want."
Right.
Kindred spirits.
Yeah. Do you think it's important to separate art from artist? Why or why not? Yeah, Casey Wiederman continues. I absolutely do. Because I think that in a lot of ways they're entirely different things. Like.
I mean, I never stopped enjoying Ender's Game because Orson Scott Card is
right.
A son of a
That is exact. That is exactly the example that I was about to give, and I think that it is. You are selling yourself short. I mean, you know, H.P. Lovecraft, total racist prick, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that. I mean, you know, that probably informed a lot of the stuff that he wrote, right? Like, a lot of the ways that his characters felt about these unspeakable horrors were probably going to roll
especially
him and steal his wallet
stuff.
And fuck his girlfriend.
Yeah. Do you think
it came from how he felt about
the
Puerto Ricans in Brooklyn? But
yeah, do you think he felt like anyone that wasn't white-skinned was some sort of six-dimensional horror?
Probably.
Because one of the dimensions is color.
He mellowed out a lot in his later life. But yeah, the earlier stuff, it's really obvious on his mind.
The stuff that we do and the way that it is appreciated in the moment is probably, for some people, tied up in who we are as a result of the relationship that we cultivate with the people who consume the products that we create, right? I mean, I think the people who play KOL and listen to our podcasts have a different experience because of the melding of art and artist that they get as a result of us being... You know,
humans that are
humans that are super forthcoming about our thought processes and stuff, right? I mean, like,
and our foibles,
yeah. And the fact that you know, you also can't record 6 hours of audio a week without telling stories that are personal because you just run out of shit to say unless you were really good at making stuff up.
So, Adam Carolla is a good example, I think, of somebody who is just super forthcoming with details about his life in general. Like, there's probably a bunch of stuff that he doesn't talk about, but he talks about a lot of things. And you, like, if you are a listener to his, you know, his old radio shows or Loveline or his new podcast or whatever, like, you're going to hear about, like, all kinds of things. And I think that kind of openness and honesty serves him really well. You know, like, that's kind of what he's built his whole current career on.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think you're going to be more forgiving of somebody if you think of them as a human.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you sort of have to separate art from artist in the sense that art is a thing that isn't going to be dead in 100 years necessarily, a given thing, right? So, okay. I mean, like, eventually the thing is going to be there without the guy that made it. Maybe.
You can. I think you can outlive your.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Art. Sure. You can. I mean, there's too much stuff being made now for that not to be the case, right? And plus, there's those pricks burning down the library at Alexandria.
Yes.
That's okay though, because it's a cool story. So you know what? That was a cool listener's mail segment. I enjoyed that, and I like that the questions were short. So sweet job, bros, in the forums.
Yeah, you did
writing those questions. We got a bunch of emails. We got a bunch of emails that were like equally punchy and concise, and it was fucking great. Like that, I felt like a dick for like I felt like I was chiding people when I did that. But like it, everybody was like, okay, here you go. We opened ourselves up to them. We told them what we wanted.
Was it because we were just getting like longer and longer, like sort of half?
Fewer and more meandering questions that didn't, you know, they just weren't like a thing that I felt like we could just riff on, right? Or a thing that riff could us on.
Right.
But you know what? We're at about the amount of time that I like to put into one of these motherfuckers. And so I think it might be time for, I don't know, you to probably go to bed without dinner and me to figure out what places are open this late to go to dinner at.
If we can get small amounts of food, that'd be fine. I just don't want to eat 12 burritos again for dinner. I'm starting to get fat.
We won't go to burritos by the dozen.
Yeah. That was such a bad choice. we had pupusas. That was another thing we did.
Yeah, we did. We ate a bunch of pupusas. We ate two pupusas each, but
that was a lot of pupusas.
Pupusas?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like
Salvadoran, Eskimo babies?
Salvadoran what? Savory pastries.
Yeah, after we finished, we had a papoose made of papoosas that we were carrying in our. We were heavy with child, and that child was a papoosa.
Melissa had a dream where she got pregnant, and then I got her pregnant again while she was already still pregnant. So you were double pregnant? And she's like, yeah, I wasn't entirely clear in the dream whether that meant I was going to have a baby like immediately after the next one, or whether it was like just queued up. So I was going to have a whole second pregnancy, or if it was going to be like simultaneous.
Battery drawer.
Yeah, battery drawer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to Video Games Hot Dog, everybody. Stay tuned for the next episode of Video Games Hot Dog, which will probably happen in about a week or so.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet at us at VGHotDog. You can email us, VGHotDog@gmail.com. And you can website us, VideoGamesHotDog.com. Thanks, guys. Have a great week. Oh, so I should just say random stuff even though I have nothing to say. I like hot dogs.